Blog Talk Radio.
How do we know this is Babylon? Psalms 137. I'm going to read it. This place was known for the slaves, slave ships, boats. The children of Israel were singing songs and being whipped and beaten in this particular land. So, let me read. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept, when we remembered Zion. Yeah. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. Willows are willow trees. Where do willow trees grow? Here in America, in the South. They didn't even grow in ancient Babylon. The willow tree's name in the Latin is the Babylonicus. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. So when we were whipped and beaten, we used to go under the willow trees and cry during slavery. Third verse. For there they that carried us away, captive, required of us a song. So this is talking about by the rivers of Babylon now. They required of us a song. That's where you get your Negro spirituals at. Okay? When the captives were enslaved during the time of slavery, they wasn't singing about Africa. The slaves were singing about Zion. Over the river Jordan, let my people go. These people knew that they were the children of Israel. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of those songs of Zion. That's Negro spirituals. 4. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? What strange land? By the rivers of Babylon. Yeah, they named it America. But the Most High called this land an extension of Babylon. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? It reads in the fourth verse. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. So David said, listen, he would rather not even know anything to forget the ease of Israel. He told the Most High, please never let me forget that we're Israel, that I'm from Zion. And our people don't even care. The seventh verse. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem who said, raise it, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. Edom is a pure blood Caucasian who was behind bringing us here to Babylon to serve. You will never find the word America in the Bible, but you know America is written because it's the most evil and wicked empire in all existence. So you mean to tell me the Most High wrote about Egypt, Babylon, Sodom and Gomorrah, and all the evils placed in the earth, but forgot America? America is Babylon the Great. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall utterly be burned with fire. For strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. The Most High has put his spirit on these other countries to take her out through war. And all the other nations know it. The government know it. The bank systems, they realize it. They know prophecy. So what they're doing, they're mobilizing to move their money into the other countries over in Europe and Africa and all these other places you see Barack Obama going. He's been to Ghana twice already, knowing that this place is about to go. The ninth verse. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament her when they shall see the smoke of her burning. So while they're teaching you prosperity, that everything is going to be alright, that you're going to be floating up into a cloud, which is nowhere in the scriptures before Christ come back. While they teach you all this madness in these philosophical schools they call churches, the Most High's prophecies are coming to pass. They're coming to pass before our eyes. You can see it. And you know it's going to happen. But Satan have what you would call a spell on the people through religion. So the Most High have awakened his elect in the last days to warn the people. Zechariah, the second chapter in your Bible, the fifth verse. For I say of the Lord, will be unto her a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. Ho, ho. Come forth and flee from the land of the north, saith the Lord. We didn't say this, the Lord said this. For I have spread you abroad as the four winds of the heaven, saith the Lord. Deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon. So is this ancient Babylon? No. This is the modern day daughter of ancient Babylon. And we're in the north. The Most High say we must flee her before the destruction comes. If we don't flee her, we'll get the plagues that are coming. In Revelation 18, which says she shall be utterly burned with fire. The eighth verse. Okay? There's more, but if you want to know more, you can always go to our website.
Shabbat Shalom, Barak Hassan, Martha Wada, peaceful Sabbath, bless you all, and thank you for tuning in to another live stream, Friday night Sabbath, coming out of Babylon here for the Gathering of Christ Church, where we connect the dots of our reality and current events with the Word of God and Bible prophecy. I am your host, Brother and Elder Ramar Karab. It is 7:21 p.m. Central Standard Time, February 9th. 2024. I pray you brothers and sisters out there are doing well today, this evening, whatever time of the day or week you're watching and coming upon this live stream, that you're doing well, that you've had a blessed week, and that you're overcoming all of the challenges that are in the midst of us in our reality right now, or at least fighting through the challenges and trying your best to get through those storms. I know it's tedious out here and very rocky with the climate, what's happening, the fact that we're living in the last days, the end times that the Bible speaks about. And so with that comes much trouble or tribulation. So I pray brothers and sisters are enduring, staying strong, keeping a sober mind and staying in peace. And, want to first and foremost give all praise, honor, and glory to the Godhead, the Elohim, whom some may refer to as the Elohim in the modern Hebrew, but the name of the Heavenly Father in the Hebrew, Ahayah, his son in the Hebrew, Yeshaya, whom the world calls Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit, which is Ruach in the Hebrew. All right, want to give all praise, honor, glory for making it to another weekly Sabbath. Here we are, thankful to be able to be here to connect to the heavenly realm, the day of the week where we can just really connect, right? Heavens are speaking on this day. And so very, very important that we are getting the download, right, from the heavens and resonating with the frequency. And not the vibration that this world would want to have us on, which is on Friday nights, they would have us out partying and all types of wickedness and evil. So from Friday night to Saturday night is the Lord's Sabbath day, the seventh day of the week. So we're thankful for that. And we're also thankful to be here for another live stream of Friday night Sabbath coming out of Babylon. All right. And like I said, every week, it becomes more of a challenge to be here before you, brothers and sisters, but we fight through it. And every week, it seems as if the information becomes more astonishing and intensifies and gets even more deep with the information that we're going into. as we're living in the times of revelation. We're living in the times of the great revealing. Things are being revealed and manifested, things that we maybe have known, prophecies we have studied, information that's been foretold happening right before our very eyes. So very exciting times we're living in. And with that being said, so much information to go into tonight. I'm very excited once again for the information that we're going to tackle tonight. So much to go through. So let's go ahead. We'll get the title before we go into any announcements. Go ahead and get tonight's title. The title for today's live stream and the content we'll be going into is The Wizards of Oz and the Cult of Baal. The Wizards of Oz and the Cult of Baal. All right, so I'm going to go into the title and the content here after we go through some announcements, okay? We are, definitely want to say I hope everybody is excited about Purim. We are on the midst and a preparation for Purim, and it actually is next week on Tuesday. So definitely looking forward to another one of our holy days to be able to celebrate that, as well as be able to, be able to give. It's a time of giving. I know for some people, they may look at it as a time to receive, what am I going to get? But the whole, point behind Purim is not what you're going to get, but what are you giving in the sincereness and genuity of your heart towards those that are less fortunate, and maybe even loved ones, brothers and sisters who you may are dear to you, and you feel like you would like to bless them with a gift. And so we have this time upon us. So I wanted to let everybody know that before we go into any other announcements. We are streaming live this evening from twitch.tv. twitch.tv/GOCC Southwest is the URL. You can put that in your web browser, and you can watch through any web browser, or you can also download the Twitch app, all right, in your app store for your device, and you can search GOCC Southwest on Twitch, on the Twitch app, and find us. All right. We also have our simulcast, right? So simulcasting through blogtalkradio.com. The guest call-in number for Blog Talk is 515-605-9327. You can see it here on your screen below below myself. If you have a comment or question, just press the number 1. I will check the call lines periodically to see if there's any callers. Anybody who would like to speak, something you would like to share, whether it be current events, prophecy, questions or responses to the information we're going through this evening, feel free to call in. I will check those calls periodically to see if we have any callers. But just make sure you press 1, and that basically puts you in the queue with your hand raised, lets me know that you have a question or you would like to speak, all right? And so let everybody know we are streaming live right now. We are streaming live, and where to find us, okay? Our main channel is youtube.com/GOCC Southwest. All right, that's the main channel. Make sure you're subscribed there. We don't typically stream from YouTube because of their strict policies when it comes to freedom of speech, censorship, and things like that, copyright. And so for the most part, we've been able to come here to Twitch, without having to worry about any issues. But make sure YouTube is subscribed to our channel because there, whenever we do go live or there's any changes or updates, you'll get the notifications and you'll be in the know. All right. Now, our live streams aren't archived permanently here on Twitch. They're only here for 7 days, so for a week. So by next Saturday, the live stream that you're seeing here will be taking down. So we have our Odyssey backup channel, GOCC Southwest on Odyssey. And all of these links can be found under the About section on our YouTube channel. When you go to the YouTube channel, you'll see our links, okay, and the different places where you can find all of where GOCC Southwest is you know, where we're habitating on the virtual platforms, all right, as well as here. You can go into the About section here on Twitch, and the same for our backup channels. And we also have a health, fitness, and nutrition live stream that we do once a month, GOCC Fit. We do that on GOCC Media on YouTube, all right? The GOCC Media on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe there. Not only will you find what we do on Friday nights in regards to health, but you also will find other content, other leaders who have live stream content and other uploading and videos that we put out there as well. All right. So that's it for Friday night, this ministry. We also have our main church YouTube channel on YouTube. It's youtube.com/agathering144. All right. That's the primary channel. Make sure you subscribe there so you can be tuned into all the Sabbath lessons, the Wednesday live streams, the pre-Patreons on Fridays, and so much more that you'll find there on the church main channel. GOCC NYC is the backup, and it's there for should there be any issues with the primary channel. All right. We also have our website for the Gathering of Christ Church, which is gatheringofchristchurch.org, where you can find everything from the Hebrew calendar to the holy days. If you would like to purchase the new Hebrew calendar, you can do so there. And I believe those calendars, if they're not ready yet, they should be ready real soon as we're getting ready for the new year in March coming up real quick. So go there for your new Hebrew calendars. We also have the GOCC Network for small businesses and entrepreneurs, businesses, products, services. If you would like to, support the community, or you would like to actually join the network, make sure you go there. All the information is there under the GOCC Network tab. From the Gathering of Christ Church website, you also can go straight to the Bible Academy, Hebrew and Bible Academy. HistoryTimes.org is a direct link for the Hebrew and Bible Academy. If you would like to find out more about the Hebrew and Bible Academy, or you would like to sign up, HistoryTimes.org is where you would go, okay? And I believe that is all of our announcements. And just checking and looking in the chat, Shabbat Shalom to everybody. I see everybody there commenting and tuning in. Definitely thank you for coming here and energy in your spirit. It means a lot, and it actually helps to fuel what we do here on Friday nights and also with the Gathering of Christ Church as a whole. All right. So now that we've gone through the announcements, let's go straight into our content for this evening, because it is going to be intense. I'll use that word. Very, very intense. And I believe in recent weeks, in recent live streams, the information we've been going into has been very intense, at least for me, just seeing going down this rabbit hole and a lot of stuff, maybe already knowing, but just getting confirmed more and more every day as we go along in this world. But the title for our live stream and content for this evening, once again, The Wizards of Oz and the Cult of Baal. The Wizards of Oz and the Cult of Baal, or some may know it as Baal. Okay, Baal or Baal. And just recapping on our previous live stream, because this particular live stream today is going to build upon what we went through in our last live stream and previous live streams. But our previous live stream, The Mystery of Iniquity Unveiled, just to do a real quick recap, right? We went down the we went down this rabbit hole talking about this mystery of sin, this man of sin that nobody can seem to identify, that the world is calling the Antichrist, Christian theology calls the Antichrist, and you have so many theories about who this man is, you know, and it's a mystery, right? And so it's hidden. And so we went through a lot of information, and what we come to find out is that through a lot of the information that we went through was that when you look at the people today that are in Jerusalem that call themselves Jewish, that they are not the real Jews, at least not according to bloodline or birthright, but through conversion. But not so much focusing on them, but those rulers and those organizations of power, all right, where you find those individuals of that particular ethnicity that are have a lot of hidden occultic things. And we were able to attach those individuals, their religion, to the lodges of Freemasonry. The lodges of Freemasonry were a lot of things are done in secret, to where you have to be initiated to be able to get the secrets, the hidden things, the occultic things, the mysticism or the mystic things. And also when you look here on your screen, the symbol for Freemasonry, of those who are familiar, is the square and compass, which is an unfinished pyramid pointing up and an unfinished pyramid pointing down. Well, if you just finish the pyramids, both going up and going down, you have your, what we've been told is the Star of David, which is on the Israeli flag, the Jewish six-pointed star. And we spoke about this star. We're going to talk more about this star tonight as well, building upon this and continuing down this rabbit hole. Now, it was interesting because I seen where on Twitch there was a copyright for the live stream. So I'm thinking, okay, we must have played some video content that was, you know, whether it was a video game or, you know, somebody else's content that was copyrighted. There was, you know, maybe a movie or a TV show, something like that. And what Twitch does is Twitch actually silences, they continue to show the video, but they silence the audio for what's been copywritten. And strangely, when I went back to check it out, I was astonished, but I wasn't surprised that what was actually muted out, that they said was copyright, was the JFK speech that we played. The JFK speech, where JFK spoke about secret societies, right? And that was weird to me because I'm like, well, this is a presidential speech. How is a presidential speech copywritten? Well, it only became more bizarre from there because it wasn't, you would think, okay, well, if the speech is copywritten, then the whole speech would be muted out. No, halfway through the speech, the audio came back. It was only the beginning part where JFK was really speaking about secret societies and how they operate in secrecy, coercion, and all those things. And then after he finished saying all of that, then the audio came back in. And I just, you know, of course, all you can do is shake your head and just know that, you know, that's the best they can do is say copyright on that. And you know, they've really exposed themselves. So there's something with this president, JFK, and him speaking on that, that they don't want people to be able to hear, because if a president is saying these things, then, you know, now it gives a lot more credibility versus what they would want to deem as conspiracy theory. Well, that's conspiracy theory, right? But if a president is calling these things out, and this president just happened to be assassinated not too long after this speech, then that would now raise eyebrows, raise alarms and red flags for people now to start maybe looking into what he was talking about. See, they can't have that, right? As long as they are telling you the truth and you're totally oblivious to what they're putting out through the predictive programming and other forms of magic, the lesser magic, that they're the white magic that they're doing through Hollywood and other areas, then that's what they want. But the minute people start waking up and putting the pieces of the puzzle together and conspiracy theory now becomes conspiracy fact, then now they have a problem because they no longer can operate in darkness. They no longer can operate in mystery. All right. That mystery becomes now unveiled. Regardless of that, we're in the end times. They're censoring on a high level. They're scrubbing JFK, you know, the JFK speech and other powerful, video content off the internet. A lot of the stuff you can't even find on YouTube anymore because they've totally scrubbed this stuff from the internet, trying to hide. But regardless of that, we're going to continue with not only unveiling this mystery of iniquity, right, but pulling back the curtain of these Wizards of Oz that are trying to hide themselves. They can no longer hide themselves behind the curtain because all things done in the dark must come to light, as our Lord and Savior Christ told us. It must come to light, as well as so many other prophecies that were spoken of that were prophesied to be fulfilled. So it can't be avoided. It can't be stopped. And so the wizards now are scrambling, trying to keep the curtains closed, but the curtains keep opening up and exposing them. So I want to start here as we continue down this rabbit hole with this Jewish conversation, okay? What is going on with the Jewish race, primarily those of the upper echelon elite status? What is going on with Freemasonry, the strange connections that are going on there, and with Judaism? And so let me pull this up for you all. We're going to start here. I know many of you all have watched this or seen this. And what I want to do today is I want to go through the information in a way to where if you're somebody who's never come across this information, this is the first time, or maybe you're not very familiar and you're trying to understand, you're trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together the best you can. I want to make it in a way to where it's anybody can come here and understand as best we can with the time we have. Not that there's not more information in history we can go into, but to make it very clear what's going on, right? We're just presenting the information, right? We're presenting the information, and it's up to you now to make the decision on what to do with that information. But we have here GOCC debate, the Jewish Confessions. How many of you all have seen this debate with our regional elder, Elder Ricar, and this Jewish man? This was 2011, Peace FM Radio in the United Kingdom, right? And so I wanted to start here because this is going to set the stage and pose the question to what we're going to go into and what we've been going into. All right, so let me pull this up here, and we're going to just take a second to look at a clipping of this. And then I have a question. All right, so let's start right here. Speaking of the religions of the world, Whoa. Now, I remember listening to this in 2011, real time, live. I don't know if I was watching it through, I think at the time the elders were using Ustream. And I don't know if this was streaming live or he was just recording this, or there was an app where you could listen to Peace FM through the internet and just hear the audio. And I did not remember this particular part where the elder made this bold proclamation. Let's hear that one more time. This bold proclamation that the elder just made. All right, one second. Let me get a good spot here. The core point of Judaism is Satanism at its core. What a bold statement. For one, because you have here a Jewish rabbi who we've been told these are the chosen people of God. So how dare anyone make such a proclamation to a Jewish rabbi that his religion is Satanism at the core, right? So just the boldness to be able to make a statement, to make that statement, is already something in itself. But then going past just making that statement, now the idea or thought of what we've been told the chosen people of God are actually in a religion that is worshiping Satan at its core. Okay. And so I wanted to start there because now we're going to go down this rabbit hole, and I want to ask the question, and this is, you know, not, I'm speaking rhetorical here. Speaking rhetorically, is Judaism Satanism at its core? I want to go through some information tonight, and I want to let the viewers who are watching this make a sound decision based on information, based on the information that we're going to go into this evening, information we went into last live stream, other information that the Gathering of Christ Church has gone through many, many, many years, going on two decades now. Other organizations maybe have gone through information, okay? But for somebody who might be first, you know, stumbling across this video, and you've always been told these are God's chosen people and that they're worshiping the true God, and that Judaism is the religion of God, his chosen religion. We're going to present the information for you this evening and for this live stream for you to now examine whether or not that is the case or if that is not the case. All right. And so let us now go. I want to go to the book we went into last live stream. All right. And if they're not, and if it is a religion of Satanism at its core, what does that mean? What all does that mean? What all does that entail? So we went through this book in our last live stream, The Millennium, A New Age Exposé by DeMond Wilson. DeMond Wilson was, he's an actor. He was the character Lamont Sanford on Sanford and Son. Okay, and here you have the front cover of his book, many things that people may, symbols and signs you may be familiar with. You have the eye in the pyramid, which is on our $1 bill. Here it is in its full full imagery, you also see your Masonic square and compass. And another name for this book was also The New Age Millennium, an expose of symbols, slogans, and hidden agendas. And one part I wanted to come in here is he's talking about how this country was founded. America was founded on the Constitution and by a lot of people, mainly of Caucasian persuasion, would tell you that the Constitution is one of the greatest documents ever written. And so he's challenging this train of school of thought by saying, well, or asking the question, how is it one of the greatest documents ever written when we look at it, it allowed slavery? And so for a black person, how would that be good for us when we were enslaved and under oppression and have started our, started out on the very bottom and have been fighting and clawing our way, trying to get off the bottom ever since slavery? That doesn't sound too good for us. And that's without even going into the fact that you had the North American Indians, the indigenous people of the Americas. You also had the Hispanic ethnicities, Puerto Rico and Cuba, the Mexicans, all the indigenous people of the Americas, the Caribbeans, right? How was it great for them that they had their land stolen from them? And now this new documentation is coming in and solidifying that the people that have come in and stole your land had the right to do so and are justified. And this is a great thing that we have in place now, this United States of America now, this new beginning. So it says here, DeMond Wilson speaking, it says, this kind of attitude explains why some people, namely Caucasians, feel superior to people of color. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were set up that way from the beginning. Just as the hand of Providence has chosen the Caucasian race, those of European descendants, to usher in the New World Order in America, the hand of God and the creator of the universe has chosen the black man, those of African descendants, to be the conscience of moral standards of America. So we here in the Gathering of Christ Church have proclaimed to the world, and it's not something that hasn't been proclaimed before the Gathering of Christ Church was in existence, but that the blacks that came over on slave ships in the Americas are part of the lost tribes of Israel, all right, along with the natives of the Americas, had their land taken from them. We've been scattered to the four corners of the earth. We are the diaspora. And that the Caucasian or European race is what the Bible who the Bible calls Esau or Edom. So we, the blacks, natives of the Americas, the 12 tribes of Israel, which Israel was known as Jacob. He had 12 sons, and those 12 sons had 12 tribes, right? We're going to go into the story of Jacob. But not only are we going to go into the story of Jacob, we're also going to go into the story of his brother Esau, right, who we teach are the Europeans, the Caucasian race, right? And this is in general speaking, right, in general. So majority. We understand that there's, mixing and dispersion, and through that you may have somebody appear a certain race and they're not really that race. That's not really something that, anybody is really going to know. But as a whole, because based on the prophecy in history, We are able to make this proclamation that that's who we are. It also, based on the history and prophecy, we're also able to identify who Esau is, okay, through the characteristics and attributes, not only identifying Esau in the Bible, but also when we look at, you know, common, you know, modern history and our secular history, looking at the characteristics of who the Caucasian race are and able to parallel and match that up with Esau in the Bible. So we're going to go through that again in more detail tonight also. All right. And what I want to do is I want to go to the Bible to show this, because we're going to go through scriptures first. And then we're going to go into modern or secular history to see, can we tie the two together and confirm some of these bold proclamations that has been stated, that at the core of Judaism is Satanism, at the core, that the black man, right, part of the 12 tribes of Israel, and that the white man, or Caucasians, are Esau or Edom. So speaking of Jacob and Esau, and we are in the end of the world, for those that believe in the Bible and understand the signs and prophecies, let us go to the book of 2 Esdras, chapter 6, verse 9. Now, 2 Esdras, chapter 6, or the book of Esdras, is in the King James Apocrypha. And Esdras is actually Ezra. So when you go into the Old Testament and you see the book of Ezra, it's the same person who wrote 2 Esdras. But it can only be found in the Apocrypha. So we're going to 2 Esdras chapter 6, and we're starting at verse 9. Actually, let's start at verse 7. 2 Esdras chapter 6, verse 7 reads, "Then answered I and said, what shall be the parting asunder of the times, or when shall be the end of the first and the beginning of it that followeth?" So Esdras is asking the Most High God, what is going to be the end of the world? And what is it going to be like when it transitions from the end of the world into the kingdom that Christ will bring when Christ returns, transitioning from the end of this age into the new age of Christ? Verse 8, "And he said unto me, from Abraham unto Isaac, when Jacob and Esau," okay, there they go, "Jacob and Esau were born of him, Jacob's hand held first the heel of Esau. For Esau is the end of the world, and Jacob is the beginning of it that followeth." So what does that mean? When you look at the world, at the end, Esau is going to be ruling the world. So you need to look no further than to see who is in power. Race of people have the most power in this world. Now, most people would say and have said for a long time, it's a white man's world, right? Most people would talk about the Roman Empire, right? The Roman Empire has been in existence, you know, well over 1,000, going on 2,000 years, all right? So if the Roman Empire isn't in power now, then who is? What power of people are in power right now? So if you're able to identify them, then you can identify who Esau is. That's just one indicator. We're going to get many indicators because Esau is the end of the world. And Jacob is the beginning of it that followeth. So as this world comes to an end, Jacob is going to then rule, or he's going to come into dominion and power and rulership in the next world that Christ will bring. Because after this world's over with, then it's Christ's kingdom. It's his world. So if you are Esau, wouldn't you do everything in your power to hold on so that you don't lose control? In your mind, you're thinking, let me do everything I can in my power so that I do not allow Jacob to become ruler. So Jacob doesn't get the inheritance or the heirship. So we're going to talk about Esau and Jacob and how Jacob, his hand, when he was being born, was holding on to the heel of Esau. And so therefore, he is coming in right behind Esau. So it's an analogy or a metaphor, and it parallels how this world would end. Esau first, and Jacob coming in right behind Esau. And so when Damon Wilson, and I don't know if Damon Wilson knows that he believes that the blacks in America are Israelites or not, but whether he knows it, he's saying it, whether he knows he's saying it or not. The fact that he's saying that the hand of God and the creator of the universe has chosen the black man, those of African descendants, to be the conscience or moral standards of America. Somebody might say, well, hold up. Look at the black community right now. The black community is in a state of disarray, confusion, botchery, evil, all kind of wickedness. I mean, on and on and on and on, the crazy culture of the black community right now. Well, we're going to get a scripture on that here in a moment, but also, just as the Bible states that the Esau is the end of the world and Jacob is the beginning of that that followeth, he also makes a statement that as the hand of providence has chosen the Caucasian race, those of European descendants, to usher in the New World Order in America, would make sense as we're in the end that Esau would usher in this New World Order here in America. And this is stuff that we can read of in their literature, their writings, their secular history, their plans and agendas when we and get past the veil. All right. And so let us now go to the book of Jeremiah, speaking about the black man being chosen to bring the conscience or moral standards of America, when so many would look at the black community as degenerative, okay, as a joke. So let us go now to Jeremiah 51. All right, this is prophecy. We're looking at prophecy, and we're looking and how we're able to come to these conclusions is not only do we look at prophecy, because these things were written hundreds of years ago, even thousands, to now figure out, based upon what was said then, how does it shape up now today, to try to, you know, fit the bill with the characters that fit the bill. Also looking at the history before prophecy. There was historic history that actually gives attributes and characteristics as well. So when we go to Jeremiah 51, and we look at verse 19, it reads, the portion of Jacob is not like them. So you have a portion of Jacob, a portion of the black man, the portion of Israelites, right? All 12 tribes is not like the rest. Okay. They're set apart. They've separated themselves to where they stand out from the debauchery and the foolishness that you see going on in the black community right now. That portion is a remnant. Okay. It's just a portion. Doesn't say, it's not talking about all black people. Okay. It's not all black people. It's not all Hispanic people. It's not all Native American people. It's not all diaspora that's been spread to the four corners of the earth. Okay, so there's a remnant of Jacob that is not like the rest. For he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. Now, this is what it says about Jacob. So now we're going to look at scripture based upon what Damon Wilson was saying in his book about the black man in America being the moral or conscious standard for America. It says here about Jacob, "Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms." So if Esau understands and knows this, what do you think Esau is going to do so that this doesn't happen? He's going to do everything he can to keep the black community in the state of disarray that it's in right now, the state of confusion, the state of evil, the state of debauchery. He's going to do everything he can to make sure we stay in that rut. Because once we get out that rut, this is what's in store for not just Esau, but all the nations. So all the nations will now work with Esau to make sure we stay in this condition so that they can also have, you know, some benefits in Esau's rulership, right? And as long as they're above us, they're not on the bottom. They may not be on the top as Esau is, but they're not on the bottom, all right? So when I was reading that, when Damon Wilson said that, it just reminded me of this scripture. And to show people that there's only going to be a remnant of black people that are going to make the, you know, make the change needed to fit this bill we're reading of right here. Not all black people are going to fit this. Just because you're black or just because you're an Israelite of whatever tribe doesn't give you automatic access or automatic you know, you're automatically counted in with this prophecy, right? Because those that don't make the change and repent, accept Christ and be baptized will be destroyed too, right? It'll be just as if they were Gentiles, all right? But so now we're talking about Jacob and Esau. And let us go back into history to get the history on Jacob and Esau. So we're going to go to Genesis 25, and we're going to get the story about Jacob and Esau, where we just read it in the book of 2nd Esdras chapter 6, where when Jacob and Esau were born, Jacob came out holding on Esau's heel. So here we have Genesis 25. It states here the birth of Esau and Jacob. So we look at verse 21 here. It says, "And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb. Two nations. And two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels." Two different types of people. Right, two totally different mannerisms. You know, when you have twins that are born, there's a lot of similarity there with those twins. Right, even in your most unidentical twins, there's a lot of similarity still. Right, but these two people are going to be totally different from one to the other. Right, with very, very little that they have that's the same. It says here, "And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." The elder shall serve the younger. So that means whoever's born first is going to end up serving the younger brother. "And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first," here comes the elder, "came out red all over like an hairy garment. And they called his name Esau. All right, so the first one's being described as red and hairy. Let's see how the second one is described. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel. So there goes the prophecy, the future prophecy being foretold by Second Esdras, showing that as the elder will serve the younger. Jacob was holding on Esau's heel, showing that he will come in with his dominion as soon as Esau's dominion ends. And Esau's dominion will be the end of the world, the last days. And his name was called Jacob. All right, Jacob. There's a lot in here. I just want to get to some of the points. As you can see here, the boys grew in verse 27, and Esau was a cunning hunter. Another characteristic of Esau. He's cunning, crafty, okay? Cunning, crafty, and a hunter. All right? He would hunt and hunt from a cunning and crafty manner. All right, now we're going to move forward to deal with some more history on speaking about Jacob and Esau. And so we're going to fast forward to chapter 28. Because this is going to set the stage for the information we're going to go into tonight. So now we can connect the Bible to modern or secular history. Okay. Books and white papers and information we go into tonight, we can now see who fits, what character fits who in this script, this biblical script, when we look at today's reality. And will it give us insight into who they are, what their plans are. So when we go to Genesis 28, now comes time for marriage. It says here, 28:6. When Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padanaram to take him a wife from thence, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. So Jacob told Esau not to marry the Canaanites. Why did he tell Esau not to marry the Canaanites? We're going to go into that. All right. And sorry about that. That was a large bug flying around. So verse 7, and that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother and was gone to Padanaram. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael and took unto the wives which he had Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nabajoth, to be his wife. So Esau, he didn't marry the Canaanite daughters either, but he went unto Ishmael. Who is Ishmael? Ishmael would be your modern-day Arabs. So now when we look at the Caucasian race, who we're claiming to be Esau today, look at their relationship with the Saudis and the Arabs, right? Look at the relationship between America and Saudi Arabia. The Jewish state of Israel today in Saudi Arabia. Look at the Arab League relationship with the Caucasians. Very interesting relationship that they have. And it's going to be key to understanding more later. We talk about this intermarrying, these bloodlines, Esau and the Ishmaelites or the Arabs, the Caucasian and the Arabs. Now let's go to Genesis chapter 36, because now we're going to go into the generations of Esau. So Genesis 36 and 1 says, now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. So Esau, again, another name is Edom. And it says, Esau took of the daughters of Canaan. So Esau was told not to take of the daughters of Canaan, but eventually Esau disobeyed his father. He took of the daughters of Canaan for wives. Okay, plural. Adah, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. Okay, so you have Canaan, you have Hittite, Ahalabama, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon, the Hivite. So we have Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites. Verse 3, and Beshemoth, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nabajah. So again, also Arab wives, Ishmaelite wives. And Adah bore to Esau Eliphaz. Okay, important, these are names to know. Eliphaz was born of Adah, Adah who was the Hittite. She was the daughter of Elon. So Eliphaz now is the son of Esau through a Hittite daughter. And Bashemath bare Reuel. Now, when we drop down here to verse 6, it says, and Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all his beasts and all of his substance, which he had got in the land of Canaan, and went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. So now let's deal with this land of Canaan. All right, where would be today our modern day land of Canaan on a map? Pull it up here. This is the Bible Hub, just so people can see this here on a map. Well, when you look here, the land of Canaan would be what we would call modern day Israel today. So Esau went into this land and married the daughters of the people of this land. Now, Jacob wasn't in this land during this time. What people are in this land today? All right, what people are in this same land today? Here you have Jerusalem, Basra. Okay, you see Egypt clear over here. But this is Canaan, and then down here, as you go south, you would run into Saudi Arabia, the Arabs, Ishmael. All right, so I just want to give everybody a visual here on, we talk about Canaan, the land, as we're going through this to give you an idea so we can, again, more attributes. What people are in this land today that live in this land primarily? What are the people of this land that claim to be of this land? Is there any connection there? So let's keep going as we draw more from this particular chapter. Drop down to verse 8. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. So Esau was given Mount Seir as an inheritance in this time in the land of Canaan. So Mount Seir is in the land of Canaan. Esau is Edom. Verse 9. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. These are the names of Esau's sons. Eliphaz, the son of Adah, the wife of Esau. Remember, Eliphaz was of the Hittite woman Adah. She was daughter of a Hittite. Reuel, the son of Bashemath, the wife of Esau. And the sons of Eliphaz were, here go Eliphaz's son, the Hittites, Teman, Omar, Zepho, and Gadam, and Kenaz. And Timna was concubine to Eliphaz, Esau's son. So Eliphaz, the son of a Canaanite daughter, a Hittite woman, bare who? And she bare to Eliphaz Amalek. These were the sons of Adah, Esau's wife. So we talked about Amalek. We've been talking about Amalek also, and pinpointing to Amalek being what we would call the Jewish, the pure-blooded Jewish race today. Not your everyday Jewish person running around in Israel today, or the land of Canaan today, or even in America, right? Not, you know, those primarily would not fit within this bloodline. Now this is a higher bloodline that is we're going to go into it. That's not your normal bloodline, all right? But just so you can see, and what you would see here is you would see a lot of intermarrying to keep these bloodlines, all right? You would see intermarrying within this as well. Now, when you drop down to verse 20, it says, these are the sons of Seir, the Horite, who inhabited the land, Lotan and Shobal and Zibeon and Anah and Dishan and Ezer and Dishan. These are the dukes of the Horites, the children of Seir in the land of Edom. So also you had Seir the Horite, another Ite, who also was marrying in with Esau's children, and they were called dukes. Right? What's a duke? A duke. I'm going into the Strong's concordance here. It says Hebrew Strong's 441, a chieftain, a captain, a chief, a governor. Right? So now, let's come over here to when we go look at the dukes in our current society. Where do you find the dukes? Well, typically when you mention dukes, you're going to find them in where? Europe. There goes your European, who are the Caucasians, typically primarily in the United Kingdom. Nobody else is calling themselves dukes. It says Duke in the United Kingdom is the highest ranking hereditary title in all five peerages of the British Isles. So again, a chief, the highest ranking hereditary title. A Duke thus outranks all other holders of titles of nobility. Okay, so this is your nobility, your royalty. And they outrank all other titles, Marquess, Earl, and Baron, or Lord of Parliament. The Duke outranks, they're the highest rank of them all. And when you come down here, it says Royal Dukedoms. And you see here who? You have the Duke of Cornwall, England. Duke of Rothesay, Scotland. Duke of Cambridge, United Kingdom, currently all one person held by William, Prince of Wales. Oh, yeah. I know y'all have seen this guy. He's married to what? What's her name? Meghan Markle. I just trying to keep the top of my head the names here. He's the top Duke of England. Check the persuasion out. You have second Duke of Sussex, held by Prince Harry, son of King Charles III. So his brother is second behind him. Oh, no, he's not married to Meghan Markle. That's his brother. His brother, Prince Harry, is married to to Merkel. Yeah, he's married to, I forget the woman's name. We can get it here real quick. He's married to Catherine Middleton, right? This is all bloodline related. And when you look at Prince Harry, he's married to Meghan Markle. And her father is Jewish. Okay, when you go through here and look at the history, you'll see that her father is Jewish. Her mother's black. But they would want to, you know, strut her around as if she's a black woman. And have our sisters thinking, oh, yeah, marry a white guy. And you can be in royalty. But she's not a sister. She's Jewish through her father, okay, which is who carries the bloodline and the seed. But I'm showing you the Dukes here, Duke of Edinburgh. You have Duke of York, held by Prince Andrew, brother of King Charles. So here's the brother of King Charles. His sons are above his brother. Okay, so the lineage is passed down through the sons. And then next comes the brother, Duke of Edinburgh by Prince Edward, the next brother. Typically, it goes in order of age. So he has to be the younger brother, typically, of the older brother. Duke of Gloucester, held by Prince Richard. Cousin. Now come the cousins. Once the brothers are all in position, now comes the cousin. And Duke of Kent, Prince Edward, after the cousins are gone, now come in the second cousins. All right. Now you also have the non-royal dukes in the United Kingdom. And here they are in their list. You have Ireland, Scotland, England, United Kingdom, Great Britain. You get the drift. These are all European Caucasians that are called dukes. And the only place that we can see this in our modern time is in Europe, and we see this in the Bible in Genesis 36 when it talks about the generations of Esau. A particular Seir the Horite and his children were dukes, chiefs. Right, so we're seeing the beginning of what we see now today with the British royal family. Right, and all these different families of Esau, even connected all the way down to the Arabs. Now, let's keep going here. Let's go to when we look at Horite, I want to get that too before we move on. We look at Horite here in the Strong's, Greek or Hebrew Strong's 2752. It says here, a cave dweller. Or a troglodyte, a Korite, or aboriginal Idumean. Idumean is another name for Edom or Edomite. But what is a troglodyte? All right, let's get that definition here for you all in the dictionary. What is a troglodyte? It says... In prehistoric times, a person who lived in a cave. So these are your original cavemen proclaiming to be dukes. So you notice how they would always make black people out to be monkeys and primitive and Neanderthal. They would want to attach us to this narrative of being these cavemen. Well, according to their history, they're the original troglodytes, the Horites that dwelt in caves. Remember, Esau also came out all over like a hairy garment, right? So I'm just giving you some attributes and characteristics here, but let's keep going. Why did Jacob tell Esau and Jacob not to marry the Canaanite? daughters. Deuteronomy 7. Let's deal with that now. Deuteronomy 7, verse 1. And it reads, now this is, you know, Jacob now, he's had children, 12 sons, make up the 12 tribes. They had children. Israel is made a nation coming out of Egypt. Egypt, Moses is given the law. And now Moses is giving the law to the children of Israel, Jacob's grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-great, you know, basically Jacob's children's children. And so what did Moses do? He's going to tell them the same thing Jacob told his children. It says here, Deuteronomy 7 and 1, when the Lord shall bring thee into the land, whither thou goest to possess it, and has cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, there goes Amalek's grandfather, great-grandfather, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites. All these were the wives that Esau married when he went into the land of Canaan. They were in that land. And the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. So why were these seven nations greater and mightier than Israelites? People would say, man, Israelites, they were the greatest. They were the strongest. They were, you know, even the Most High said that Jacob would be, that one would be stronger than the other. How are these people so much greater and stronger, mightier? We're going to get that in a moment. Verse 2. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Now that sounds cold-blooded, cruel. Why would God say and tell us to utterly destroy them, to smite them? We're going to get all that. Verse 3, neither shalt thou make marriages with them. So anybody reading this would be like, man, this God, he has so many rules. What if I want to marry one of them? Why can't I? Like why? You know, people see this and get upset. Like, who is he to try to put stipulations on who I can and can't marry, right? Without understanding the reasoning behind the why, right? It says, thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. So your sons cannot marry their daughters as wives, and your daughters cannot marry their sons as husbands. It's forbidden. Verse 4. Here's some of the reason. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. So this is just the beginning of the reasoning why they serve other gods. And we're going to go into why they serve other. The Most High God chose Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as his chosen. Esau was not chosen. Ishmael, Abraham's other son, was not chosen. But Esau and Ishmael linked up. And Esau linked up with these people serving other gods in the land of Canaan. It says here, verse 5, but thus shall ye deal with them. Ye shall destroy their altars and break down their images and cut down their groves and burn their graven images with fire. So these particular people had what? Altars, images, groves. Right. So when we look here on the screen, what do you see on your right? This is the beginning of what we're reading here in Deuteronomy, what's going on in the land of Canaan. All right. And this is why we were forbidden to marry, because these people were serving other gods. They were, you know, their practices, their religion. We're going to go into it. So if you marry in with them, you're now going to follow in behind their traditions. And now the culture that was given to us as Israelites from Abraham as the chosen will now have been lost and will now be following that culture instead of the culture that the Most High God gave to us to follow that is his ways. Let's now go to Deuteronomy chapter 20. We're just now scratching the surface of now why we were told not to marry these people, but Esau married them. And we're commanded not to follow after them, right? Just because you didn't marry them doesn't mean now you can follow after their ways. Deuteronomy 20:16. But of the cities of these people which the Lord thy God doeth give thee for an inheritance, thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth. But thou shalt utterly destroy them, namely the Hittites, Amalek's grandfather on the mother's side, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, Esau's other wives, sons' wives, daughters' husbands, marrying all these people, and the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee. Again, if somebody's looking at this without understanding the history behind or the understanding as to why they would look at this as cold-blooded. You mean to tell me that God told us that, you know, told the children of Israel to go in and destroy all these people? Why? What did they do to you? What did they do to you? Numbers chapter 13. Numbers the 13th chapter. And starting at verse 25. It says, report of the spies. Now remember, this land, you find it. Oh, here we go. This land that Esau had went into, the land of Canaan, was supposed to be given to the children of Israel coming out of Egypt. So the children of Israel came out of Egypt. They went into the wilderness. They crossed the Red Sea and went down into the wilderness and was wandering in the wilderness. And then upon 40 years of wandering, they then were to come up into the land of Canaan. Well, who was in that land? All the people that Esau married, right? Esau was in the land. So now Moses is sending spies in to spy out the land when they're coming against it. It's giving you all some history for those who aren't aware of the history. Numbers 13:25 says, and they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. So now the spies have come back to Moses to tell them what they saw when they went to the land of Canaan to spy it out. Because before you go into the land, you have to spy it out to see what's going on. You don't just walk up in there. Because people are already living in that land as if it's theirs. Verse 27. And they told him and said, we came unto the land whither thou sent us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. So we went to the land, and that land is flourishing. It's booming. That land is some of the best land, if not the best land all around that we've seen. Nevertheless, but the people be strong that dwell in the land. Remember, Deuteronomy 7 told us that the people be mighty, mightier, and greater. So the spies are coming back and said, the people that are there, that dwell there, are strong, and the cities are walled and very great. Now, I don't think a person reading this would really understand the magnitude of the greatness of these walled cities without knowing the history. These aren't just like your fence in your neighborhood, in your house, where you have a fence up, right? This isn't just the wall like you would see, you know, at a military base, all right? I'm going to show you, we're going to see how great a wall these cities were. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. Who are the children of Anak? We're going to see it here in a moment. Who are these children? Well, We go to Hebrews Strong 60:61. What is it? Who was Enoch? A Canaanite. These are your Canaanites now. What's so big about Enoch? Check this out, verse 29. The Amalekites, that goes Esau's grandson, married to, born of a Hittite mom. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. And the Hittites, that go those Hittites, and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. Remember, Esau was given Mount Seir. And the Hittites, the Horites, they were mountain, they were cavemen, they were cave dwellers. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. So this would be like your modern day Palestine. Right off the Mediterranean Sea is where the Canaanites were. All this land is now inhabited by these great and mighty people. And verse 30, and Caleb steeled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. So now Caleb is like, let's go get our land. Right? What are we waiting on? Hold up. Verse 31. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. So they're trying to, you know, get Caleb to pump his brakes. Like, listen, you tripping. We're not going to go down there and mess with those people. Not right now, right? They're on a whole different level. What level? Verse 32. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. Not just figuratively eateth up, but literally, it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. So if you try to go up in that land, if we try to go up in there, we're going to get ate up, ate alive, literally and figuratively. We don't stand a chance. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. How great a stature? Verse 33. And there we saw the giants. What giants? Well, when you go to Genesis chapter 6, and you read Genesis chapter 6, verse 4 says, there were giants in the earth in those days. This is before the flood. This is when the daughters of God, the sons of God saw the daughters of men. The angels came down and took them wives. And from those women and those angels consummating came giants. And with that came what? A flood on the earth to destroy the earth. Well, what happened? Some of those giants survived. And they inhabited in the land of Canaan. Because being that that land is the chosen land, the promised land, those who rule from that land rule the whole world. Just going more into how these people were had this level of power. But it wasn't just that. It was more of where they got their power. They were giants. The sons of Enoch, which came of the giants. So these sons of Enoch, these Canaanites, came from these giants we read of in Genesis chapter 6. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. So imagine that, family. You've seen a grasshopper, right, outside. And that grasshopper sees you. What does that grasshopper do? That grasshopper, it takes flight, and it's out of there because it sees you coming as a giant, and it knows any moment gets squashed, all right? So the children of Israel, in the sight of these Canaanites, these Hittites, these Amorites, these Amalekites, all these ites in this land, they're all living together. So if they're living together, they're dealing with one another, right? That giant, or what you would call Nephilim bloodline, is now amongst those inhabitants in that land. because Esau didn't listen to his father. He was intermarrying in this land. So what of Esau's bloodline? Reading on here, it says, and so we were in their sight. Okay, so now it's understanding why we were told not to marry any of them. They're Nephilim. Why we were told to go kill them and utterly destroy all of them. They're Nephilim. They're not people. They should have died in the flood. They shouldn't exist, right? And they're ruling from the chosen land, which has given them even more power, being in that land. But then when you go to Joshua, because Joshua was able to go into the land and take it back, or take the land that was our land. And so we're going to read that part here, Joshua 24, verse 2. It says here, and Joshua said unto all the people, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood. See, there goes that flood in old time, even Terah or Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. And I took your father Abraham from the other side of the flood and led him throughout all the land of Canaan and multiplied his seed and gave him Isaac. Now let's drop down to verse 11. All right, so now we're getting a history and geographical proximity for those who may not be aware, and for those who, you know, are aware, it's just so we can lay the foundation of the information for tonight. Okay. Verse 11, and you went over Jordan and came unto Jericho, and the men of Jericho fought against you, the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Girgashites, the Hivites and the Jebusites, and I delivered them into your hand. Okay. Again, all those ites that Esau intermingled, which we have seen, are the Nephilim or the giants. Maybe not every single one of them was the giant or of the bloodline, but they were intermingling. Verse 14, now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth and put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt and serve ye the Lord. Okay, so we were told to not worship their gods. See, so this is another part of their strengthening was these gods they were serving. Right, these were their fathers, the giants' fathers, which were the fallen angels. They were worshiping these angels as gods. They became the demigods, and this is where they got their power. Okay, through their knowledge, through their stature, even on a spiritual level, dealing with these fallen ones. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob on the other side, before the flood, Noah, Shem, right, which is the fathers of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, served the Most High God. Okay, but you also had those who were serving these fallen gods, these giants, worshiping them. Okay, so Joshua is making a, with the children of Israel, that we're not going to serve those gods that were destroyed in the flood or the gods of the people whose land we just took because they were in our land. We're not going to worship their gods. Verse 16. And the people answered and said, God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. Okay, verse 18. And the Lord drave out from before us all the people, even the Amorites, which dwelt in the land. Therefore, we will also serve the Lord, for he is our God. All right, so the Lord helped us drive these people out. Let's read down to verse 23. And Joshua said unto the people, ye cannot serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions nor your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve strange gods, then he will turn and do you hurt and consume you. After that, he hath done you good. So if we go after these gods, what's going to happen to us? If we go to serve these strange gods, we're going to get hurt. The Lord will allow us to be hurt now by these people and allow them to have power over us and to consume us. You see, so worshiping their gods weakens us. It's like kryptonite. It weakens us and empowers them. So what would they want us to do so that they can have power? We're going to go into that tonight. Verse 21, and the people said unto Joshua, nay, but we will serve the Lord. And Joshua said unto the people, ye are witnesses against yourselves that ye have chosen you, the Lord, to serve him. And they said, we are witnesses. Now, therefore, put away, said he, the strange gods which are among you, and incline your heart unto the Lord God of Israel. And when you come over here, here's something I missed earlier, a guide to the royal family's dukes and duchesses. Just going back to the dukes, here you see the royal family and the persuasion of these so-called royal families, these dukes, the princes and kings of England, British monarchy. All right, just wanted to give you some visuals here. But when you talk about what we just read in the land of Canaan, there is an article here, JameenBradley.com, the giant clans of the Bible. It says, the creation of the giant Nephilim in Genesis 6, right before the flood, is a story that surprises most people today, no matter how long they've been a Christian. So this isn't something that's taught within Christendom. These giants aren't being taught. What we're taught is those are the sons of Seth. Now, when you come down here, it talks about what we just read in Numbers 13, that these are Nephilim that the spies saw, sons of Anak. It says here, this is the part I want to focus in on. It says, yes, the giants have now been around long enough to take on different names. In this case, a giant named Anak has gained enough attention that his giant descendants are now a people group known as the Anakim. But other names for the giants will come out as well, because different nations had different names for the Nephilim. Okay, reading down here, it says, we also see the Amorites described by the prophet Amos as having the height of cedars, showing us that some of the Amorites were known also as giants. However, we know that not all the Amorites were giants because of the fuller picture the Bible paints of them. In a similar way, the Bible also seems to relate to us that a few giants were dispersed throughout the human clans of the Amalekites. So you see dispersal of the giants, their bloodline amongst Amalek, the Hittites, which came from, Amalek came from, Jebusites, Canaanites, which were other daughters Esau married, and Philistines. And so now our list of giants' clans has grown to the Nephilim, the Anakim, the Emim, the Rephaim, and the Zamzumim. We also expect to see a few of the giants living amidst the Amorites, the Amalekites, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Canaanites, and the Philistines. They are everywhere. All right. That was what's going on in the land of Canaan before we got there. And so we had to destroy all of that. We were told to destroy all of them, not worship their gods. All right. Who we were told. So let's now go into that and why we were told. Let's go to Leviticus 18. Why were we told this? What was going on with them and their practices, their worships? Leviticus 18:21 tells us what? And thou shalt not let any of thy seed pass through the fire to Molech. Neither shalt thou profane the name of the of thy God. I am the Lord. Who is Molech? King, the chief deity of the Ammonites. So when you look on your screen here, you see who? Molech on your right. And what do you see being given to Molech? A child. And we were told not to let any of our seed pass through the fire to Molech. So what was given to Molech? A child or children for burnt offering. See the fire? This is what was going on in the land. This is how they were getting and keeping their power. Burnt offering and sacrifice of people. Blood being shed. All right? Spirits being given over. Souls being given over. It empowered their gods and weakened us if we followed behind that, but empowered them. Let us now go to chapter 20 in Leviticus. And now these are the people who Esau married, just so we understand his bloodline, his lineage, because this is going to set the stage for now when we go into the books we're going to go into. So we can get a better overall picture when we go back to what we read, what we heard earlier from Elder Ricard about at the core center of Judaism is Satanism. Right? Let's not forget, you know, what we heard earlier, this bold proclamation as we're building and we're seeing what we would call today Satanism happening back during this time. And this was happening before the flood. And then it continued on after the flood because these giants continued to teach the people of the land in that time these same religious rites. Leviticus 20 and 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, again, thou shalt say to the children of Israel, whosoever he be of the children of Israel or of the stranger that sojourn in Israel that giveth any of his seed unto Molech, he shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. So if you were to take your child and give your child unto this god, this idol, Molech, you were to be found and stoned, put to death. All right? Not playing that game. Verse 3, and I will set my face against that man and will cut him off from among his people because he hath given of his seed unto Molech to defile my sanctuary and to profane my holy name. And if the people of the land do any ways hide their eyes from the man, when he giveth of his seed unto Molech and kill him not, then I will set my face against that man and against his family and will cut him off and all that go a-whoring after him to commit whoredom with Molech from among their people. So when it comes time to deal with the person who's now worshiping, sacrificing to this god or any of these gods, and you don't say nothing, and you turn away like you didn't see nothing, you too are about to get cut off. You too will be cut off from among the people because now you become an accomplice, right? You see it. You see the evil, and you got nothing to say about it. It's as if it's okay, right? No, it's your business too, right? And this is what it means to hold each other accountable. We hold each other accountable when we're doing wrong. What do they practice and teach us in the hood? Stop snitching, right? Because that's what they want to promote in our neighborhoods, evil, this types of evil. But let's keep going here. Verse 6, and the soul that turneth after such as have familiar spirits and after wizards. The soul that turneth after such as have familiar spirits and after wizards to go a-whoring after them, I will even set my face against that soul and will cut him off from among his people. So what also can you attach to these gods, to Molech, is wizardry, wizards, come from, spawned from this religion. This Molech religion. What's another name for Molech? We're going to get it. Jeremiah chapter 23. Jeremiah 23 and 35. What also can we see as a name from Molech? Thus shall ye say, 32, chapter 32. Jeremiah 32 and 35. Jeremiah 32, 35 tells us what? And they built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire unto Molech. They built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire unto Molech. So even after we were told not to do it, we did it anyway. Are we still doing it to this day? And if we're doing it, who is actually giving us the worships? Who is giving us the culture to do so, to worship these gods? So the high places of Baal are the places where burnt offerings of children are given to Molech, which I commanded them not, neither came it to my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin. So what they look to try to cause Judah to do? They would look to cause Judah to sin, which now takes us to 2 Thessalonians. And we talk about the mystery of iniquity. The mystery of iniquity. 2 Thessalonians 2 and 3 tells us what? Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. So what would this man of sin look to try to cause Judah to do? To sin. This man of sin would try to be every place we are to influence us to sin, whether we are knowingly sinning or ignorantly sinning, doesn't matter. We're in sin. And so he would put in a system, an infrastructure. He would put in educational systems. He would put in religion, right? Put in all of these movements to control us, because as long as we're controlled and under sin, they rule. It empowers them and their gods, all right? And so when you read this chapter, but just, you know, verse 7, for the mystery of iniquity doeth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. So this iniquity has always worked, but it's worked under the radar to where it's a mystery. Nobody can identify it. Right? Why can nobody identify it? The book of Obadiah, and then we're going to go to Deuteronomy, and then we're going to go into now secular information. Why can nobody identify it? Obadiah verse 1 tells us, the vision of Obadiah, thus saith the Lord God concerning Edom. When you come down to verse 6, how are the things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up? It's a mystery because it's hidden. Who's hiding it? Esau, right? His sons. He intermingled in with the Nephilim. So if the Lord God told us to destroy them, all their works, until there's no remembrance under the sun, if you were them, what would you do? Would you not find the best way to now hide yourself? Because if you're hidden and can't be found, you then can't be destroyed. But understand now, because we're living in the last days, Esau's hidden things are being sought up and searched out. Through the searching out of Esau's hidden things, we're now finding them. They're now being sought up. Right? And then going back to Deuteronomy 23, Esau's son, grandson, Amalek, who was the daughter of a Hittite, the Hittites who were in the land of Canaan and were intermarrying in the land of the giants, right? What was a commandment also specifically given to Moses? Actually, let's do this. We're going to go to Deuteronomy 25, and then we're going to come back to Numbers 24. So Deuteronomy 25. Verse 17 tells us, remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way, when you were come forth out of Egypt, how he met thee by the way and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord thy God hath given thee rest from all thy enemies round about in the land which the Lord God hath given thee for inheritance to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven, thou shalt not forget it. And so now we should understand why we were given this commandment, because they were of the seed of Nephilim. They shouldn't exist, right? And just like with Esau, an attribute, hidden things, Amalek was hiding and striking and hitting Israel in its weak spots. Okay, we come back to Numbers 25. It says here in verse, let me get it. Actually, Numbers 24, excuse me. Numbers 24 and 20. And when he looked on Amalek, he took up this parable and said, Amalek was the first of the nations, but his latter end shall be that he perish forever. That's Amalek's latter end that's promised to him. So if you're Amalek, right, and you understand that this is a decree from the Most High God against you, what would you do? Would you not hide yourself so that you can't be found? Do everything you can to hide yourself, to mask yourself. What would be some of the best places that you could mask yourself? Right? Perhaps in Judaism, masking as God's chosen people, that's a good place to hide. Who would ever think to look there? Right? I'm pretty sure at the end of the day, you know, the mystery van, Scooby and the crew could find you, right? But most people wouldn't be like that pesky dog to be able to find Amalek, right? What about within Freemasonry? Would that be a good place to hide? That you couldn't be found? Some of the questions I'm throwing out there, right? And if this is your latter end, what would you also do as well as hide? Would you not then be on the offensive? Remember, Esau the cunning hunter. Would you not be on the defensive now? Instead of being destroyed, look to destroy those who have the prophecy and have been commanded to destroy you. Remember, Jacob, what did we read earlier in Jeremiah chapter 51. The portion of Jacob is not like them. He is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war. For with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with will I destroy kingdoms. So you've got to ask yourself, if you're Amalek, what are you going to do to stop that prophecy? What are you going to do to stop these commands that are given against you for you to be utterly destroyed? You're going to be on the offensive now and look to do that to those who have been given the promises, the inheritances, right? The decree for your eradication. And so now we can understand, look to understand those who are close to us that are operating. They will look to have us worship their gods. So we will be given power over to them. And in turn, we would be destroyed. And we're going to take a look into those people tonight. And real quick, blog talks about the end. If you would like to call in real quick and speak, I see the 708 area code there. Call in. Press the number 1 if you have a comment or question. All right, 708, if you'd like to speak, press 1. If not, I'm going to go ahead and continue with the information. All right, so now let us go over to our first book that we're going to dive into this evening. We touched on it last broadcast. We're going to probably touch on it more and have touched on it a lot of other times in the past. The Synagogue of Satan. The Secret History of Jewish World Domination by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. Foreword by best-selling author Tex Mars. More on Tex Mars later. All right. What a bold proclamation to call the Jewish race, the Synagogue of Satan. Secret history, right? Hidden things of Esau, remember. How are the hidden things of Esau searched out? And just right before we go into the Synagogue of Satan, let us visit the Jewish Encyclopedia. 1925, the Jewish Encyclopedia, edition 5, page 41, tells us what? Edom is modern Jewry. Edom, who we read in the Bible, is Esau. And out of their own encyclopedia, they're telling us that they are Edom. Well, I'm confused because I thought they were Jacob. I thought they were the Jews. No, they are Jewish, right? Which there's nothing in the Bible that talks about being Jewish, meaning that you can convert into the religion Judaism. And through the conversion, you are now a Jew or Jewish. But understand that at the heart, regardless of your race, because you could be any race and convert into Judaism. But at the heart and core of these converts are Edomites out of their own mouth in their own encyclopedia. And now let's go into our book, Synagogue of Satan. Again, modern day Ukraine. Ancient Khazaria, 740 AD, when the Khazaria Empire was born. And this conversion that was just mentioned started to take place, where now you started to have these Europeans from, and when you look, Right up in this area, you have the Caucasus Mountains. Okay. Here go your Georgia, right? And you got your Caucasus Mountain ranges up in here. This is the birth of the Caucasian race in at this point. And just like with Esau, another attribute, we see mountains. The same way Esau was named after Mount Seir, the Caucasian race was named after the Caucasus Mountains. Well, during this time, there was a conversion of these people converting into Judaism, the religion of Judaism, claiming to be Jews. More on that later. More on that later. It says here, in 740 AD, in a land locked between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, known as Khazaria, a land which today is predominantly occupied by Georgia, but also reaches into Russia, Poland, Lithuania, Hungary, and Romania, the modern Jewish race is born, a modern Jewish race that incidentally is not Jewish. How can this be, you ask? Right, so then it goes into the history of how this happened. We're going to fast forward because I want to talk about these bloodlines. We're going to fast forward to 1744. On February 23rd, Mayor Amschel Bauer, an Ashkenazi Jew, is born in Frankfurt, Germany, the son of Moses Amschel Bauer, a moneylender and the proprietor of a counting house. Moses Amschel Bauer places a red sign above the entrance door to his counting house. This sign is a red hexagram that geometrically and numerically translates into the number 666, which under Rothschild instruction will end up on the Israeli flag some two centuries later. So now you get the history behind your six-pointed star. Okay. And these Bowers eventually would change their name to Rothschild. And that's another thing that you'll find with them. Their names are always changing. A good way to stay hidden. So now you have this six-pointed star beginning to take root. Never before in history was it associated with being a national emblem of anything Israelite, right? Only other nations were known and affiliated with. But now the Jewish convert, the Khazars, are now taking this star and looking to use this star as their national logo. And they would call it the Star of David. So starting there, we then move to our second book, Bloodlines of the Illuminati, Volume 2 by Fritz Springmeier. All right. And I'm not sure if you all have any of these books, but having all these books allows you to stack up the references. Okay, and a lot of these books have references from their writings, their quotes, like we just read out of the Jewish Encyclopedia. These are their words. All right, and so we're going to drop down to the Rothschilds, because in order to talk about what we're talking about, this Rothschild bloodline, you have to start here. You have to start with the Rothschild bloodline. It says here on page, what page is this? 25. It says the Rothschilds talk about their dynasty. Lord Rothschild, in his book, The Shadow of a Great Man, quotes a letter sent from Davidson on June 24th, 1814, to Nathan Rothschild. As long as a house is like yours and as long as you work together with your brothers, not a house in the world will be able to compete with you, to cause you harm or to take advantage of you. For together you can undertake and perform more than any house in the world. The closeness of the Rothschild's brother is seen in a letter from Solomon Rothschild to his brother Nathan on February 28, 1815. We are like the mechanism of a watch. Each part is essential. This closeness is further seen in that of the 18 marriages made by Mayor Amstel Rothschild's grandchildren. 18 were contracted between first cousins. So again, going back to how they marry, right? They intermarry. Why do they intermarry between cousins? Well, we talked about the dukes. And if you keep it all in the family, right, we saw the sons are first in line, then the brothers, then after the brothers, the cousins, then the second cousins. So as long as you're keeping it within the family, you keep not only the bloodline intact and keep the same blood because you're not marrying outside the house or outside the family, and you also keep the power intact. So you're keeping the bloodline and the power in-house intact. No outsiders. And that keeps your control over the throne or over whatever empire or power structure, infrastructure that you've laid in place. So that's another you know, thing we must identify here of what they do and how they keep their power. It says here, visiting the nation the Rothschilds built. The people of Germany and Turkey have been very close. I can recall meeting Turkish Gastarbeiter, guest workers in Germany. The reader will remember that Turkey fought on Germany's side in World War I. A few powerful Jews, including the Rothschilds, were responsible for the wording of the treaty imposed on Germany that ended World War I. The treaty gave the Rothschilds the German-owned railway rights in Palestine, which had been part of the Turkish Ottoman Empire, thus paving the way for the Rothschilds to have a sure leverage to dictate policy concerning Palestine. The Rothschilds have made loans to Turkey, which amounted to almost 100 million pounds. When the Turkish government collapsed after World War I, because they were on the losing side, the Rothschilds had a claim on Palestine because of those unpaid Turkish loans. The British government followed the dictates of the Rothschilds. The British were given a mandate over Palestine, and the Rothschilds were able to, through their proxies in the British government, to create the steps that led to the nation of Israel. So you want to know how Israel became a state? How it became a nation? Your Rothschilds. Right, they paved the way through their banking infrastructure, through loans, through the British government, which we just saw the British are where your dukes reside. Right, let's keep going here. And it mentioned World War One, and we're going to talk more about it here in a moment. The Albert Pike letter. You always have to keep this letter in mind, the three world wars, and where he states how they were able to create this Zionist state in World War I and World War II. They were able to create it. Well, now you're getting the behind the scenes. While he's telling you that it was going to happen, your Rothschilds were working behind the scenes to make it happen, to put themselves in position to gain back power of that land. Another God, too, because in the Albert Pike letter, Albert Pike talked about destroying Christianity. right? And in that destruction of Christianity, bringing Christians into the pure doctrine of Lucifer. So now we see here with the Rothschilds, another guy too. According to eyewitnesses who were prominent enough to visit one of the British Rothschild homes, the Rothschilds worship yet another god too, Satan. They worship yet another god too, Satan. They set a place for him at their table. The Rothschilds have been Satanists for many generations. So the same people that came up with this star to put on the Jewish flag, the Israeli flag, are known Satanists. Why would they put a Star of David that belongs to God? Right? Obviously, if that's God's star that he gave to David, obviously that star would have some power against them. Right? If in theory that's God's star, wouldn't that star be problematic to them? Shouldn't they be running as far away from that star as possible? Right? Just things to think about when it comes to that star, because you have a lot of people, including Israelites, who hold that star very dear to their heart. It says here, the Rothschilds are an important part of the history of the Seal of Solomon, also known as a hexagram. Megan David's six-pointed star, Star of David. The Seal of Solomon, the hexagram, was not considered a Jewish symbol before the Rothschilds began using it. Throughout the Middle Ages, the Seal of Solomon had been used by Arab magicians. So you see Ishmael, his magicians, using this six-pointed star well before it was considered to be Israeli. Kabbalist magicians, Druid witches, and Satanists. That's who this star was always associated with. But yet somehow it becomes God's star. It becomes Israelites' star, where Israelites are wearing it around their neck and chains and putting it on their clothes. Somebody didn't do their history here, their research. One of the few ancient uses of the symbol was on the floor of a 1,200-year-old Muslim mosque found where Tel Aviv is today. So before they got back in the land, you had Muslims, Arabs, Ishmael with this star in their mosque as a symbol on the floor. And when you go back through history, this is what you'll see with this star. Right, you'll see this star worshiped through many different religions and many different cultures. In the 12th century, an Ashkenazic Jew, Menahem ben Duji, who thought he was the Messiah, used the magical symbol. So all we're seeing with this star is magic. Hexagram. And we know that witches cause hexes on people whom they want to cause harm to. Because the Rothschilds were Satanists, they adopted this powerful magic symbol in 1822 for their coat of arms. Okay, so it was on their coat of arms before it was on the Israeli flag. The name they adopted for their family actually comes from the fact that in the 17th century, Mayor Amschel Bauer began hanging out a red hexagram in front of their house to identify it. Mayor Amschel then decided to take the name Red Shield, Rothschild in German, after the Red Seal of Solomon that they used. And so if you know the history of Solomon, right, what is, let's pull it up here real quick. What star, because they're calling it the Seal of Solomon, what star was Solomon using, right? Let's let the Bible speak on this. One second. So when you go to Amos chapter 5, 25 and 26, have you offered unto me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years, O house of Israel? But ye have borne the tabernacle of your Moloch and chewing your images, the star of your God, which ye made to yourselves. All right. So this was a star that Solomon started using because he was marrying with these women that the Most High told us not to marry, these Hittites and these Canaanite women. And then now this star falls upon Solomon's lap and he starts using it to deal with demons. Right. So when you see this star, the only time you see star mentioned in the scriptures is in this context. You also see it in the book of Acts, chapter 7:51. Right. The same thing. So this is that star that now these Rothschilds have grabbed a hold of to take of their own and saying, this is our star now. Right. This is our coat of arms. And they worked later as they're working to get the Jewish state set up to now put it on the flag once that state is set up so we can claim that land back into Moloch's full power. Reading on here, it says, some people object that the conspiracy of power is labeled Jewish rather than satanic by certain concerned citizens. This objection is valid. However, will these objectors then take the obvious next step and admit the nation of Israel, which the Rothschilds created, is satanic and not Jewish? Right? So here we are with the same question we asked at the beginning of this video, Elder Ricar. At the core of Judaism is what? Satanism. And so this question now is being asked within this book. Right? Why is this question not being asked about these people and their religion? Oh, because they're the children of God. So therefore, you can't talk about it. You cannot say these types of things about them. Reading on here, it says, this brings us right back to the Gnostic religions and Satan. Most Jewish people do not concern themselves with learning the occult significance to their treasured Megan David, Star of David. King David did not have anything to do with the hexagram, although his son Solomon did when he began worshiping Ashtoreth, star known as Astarte, Chewin, Kewan, Rimphan, and Saturn. So notice this shock on this Jewish man's face when he's called out, when his religion is called out. Total shock. Because we've been told that's anti-Semitism. You can't talk about that. You can't say those kind of things. We're going to talk about it tonight. Solomon built stars, altars to star Astarte, a.k.a. Ashtoreth. The god Saturn is associated with the star, but both Saturn and Astarte also been identified with a number of other names. Saturn is an important key to the understanding the long heritage this conspiracy has back to antiquity. The city of Rome was originally known as Saturnia, or City of Saturn. The Roman Catholic Church, which retains much of the Saturn worship, in its ritual. Saturn also relates to Lucifer. In various occult dictionaries, Saturn is associated with evil. Saturn was important to the religion of Mithra and also the Druids. Right? We also see here co-masters of the world, connections to Jews, Mormons, and Judaism. Okay? It says here, it has been said all roads lead to Rome. For this book, it could be said all paths of investigation lead to the Rothschilds. Charles T. Russell, in an 1891 letter to Baron Lord Rothschild, mailed from Palestine, outlined possible courses of action that could be taken to establish the Jews in Palestine. Russell's letters praised the Rothschilds' money, which established Jewish colonies in Palestine. All right, so now we're seeing how they got in that land, how they were starting to make their move into that land. When the Mormon church needed financing in the late 19th century, they went to Kun Loeb Co. To explain the Rothschilds' control of Kun Loeb Co., here is some background information. The method that the House of Rothschilds used to gain influence was the same that royalty had used for centuries, marriage. Okay? This is how they used for influence and power, marriage. The Rothschild children, girls and boys, have had their spouses chosen on the basis of alliances that would benefit the House of Rothschild. But since consolidating royal power, they generally have married cousins these last two centuries. Right, which so it's key to understanding Esau when you go in and you read his genealogy and see how he was aligning himself with who he was aligning himself with. Right, he was aligning himself in league with those people who had power in the land of Canaan, the Nephilim. Right, and he was making sure the Arabs, the Canaanites, he was aligning himself with them for power. Right? He disobeyed Jacob. I mean, he disobeyed Isaac. Right? And aligned himself with that power. It says here, during Russell's and Brigham Young's day, Lord Rothschild was considered the lay leader of world Jewry. Edmund Rothschild was president of the Jewish Colonization Association, which was a major Zionist group. Amsem Rothschild indicated that his grandfather, Amstel Mayer Rothschild, had insisted in Clause 15 of his will to his children. May they and their descendants remain constantly true to their ancestral Jewish faith. However, the will has been secret, and there is no way of knowing what it says. The Rothschilds have not remained true to the Orthodox faith. If this was actually what Clause 15 said, then something is amiss. The Jewish world has showered the Rothschild with praises. The Rothschilds govern a Christian world. Not a cabinet moves without their advice. They stretch their hand with equal ease from Petersburg to Vienna, from Vienna to Paris, from Paris to London, from London to Washington. Baron Rothschild, the head of the house, is the true king of Judah, the prince of the captivity, the Messiah so long looked for by this extraordinary people. The lion of the tribe of Judah, Baron Rothschild, possesses more real force than David, more wisdom than Solomon. The Prière des Sons, Sion, the Elders of Sion, also relates to the Rothschilds, who are reported to serve on a Jewish Council of Elders of Zion. The Rothschilds have helped the Jewish people the Rothschilds' own way. All right, so it's just going to show how they've controlled all of Christianity. The Catholic Church. They've given us our Christianity, Mormonism. Every religion you can think of has come out of the Catholic Church that's considered Christian. They're behind it. Right? Now we're going to talk about them, co-masters of the world, their connections to secret societies. The Rothschilds have played a major role in the Bavarian Illuminati. And it is known that at least one of the sons of Amsel was a member. As the reader remembers, Amsel placed his sons in the major European capitals, where they each set up the principal banking houses. By their own secret intelligence service and their own news network, they could outmaneuver any European government, right? So, again, through secrecy, through money, through finance, They were able to put themselves in position within government. All the people, whether it was family members or people who they had full control of, to be in position in government. And that was how they were able to control wars, government policy, right? All of that. It says here, the Masonic reference book, 10,000 Famous Freemasons, Volume 4, page 74, indicates two other sons of Amstel were Masons, James Mayer Rothschild and his brother Nathan Mayer Rothschild. James Rothschild in Paris was a 33-degree Scottish Rite Mason, and his brother Nathan in London was a member of the Lodge of Emulation. And Jewish Freemason Katz indicates Solomon Mayer Rothschild, a third member of the Five Brothers, was initiated into Freemasonry on June 4th, 1809. The Rothschilds became powerful within Freemasonry, right? So here we see again this Jewish Freemason connection, and with the Rothschilds in mind, right? Let's keep going here. It says here, co-masters of the world, control over Satanism and witchcraft. So not only are they in control of your Christendom, they are also in control over Satanism and witchcraft. So it says here, chapter 2.11 gives the name of a witchcraft council of 13, which is under Rothschild control, and in turn issues orders to various groups. One of the purest forms of Satanism can be traced to the Jewish Sabbatean sect and its Frankish spinoff. The leaders of this up to the Rothschilds were Sabbatai Zevi, Nathan of Gaza, Jacob Frank, and then the Rothschilds. So we talked about them last broadcast. Sabbatai Zevi, Ottoman Jewish mystic, who claimed he was the Messiah, right? So you want to know where the Rothschilds' lineage came from, starting right here. This guy. From there, you had Jacob Frank, who proclaimed himself to be the reincarnation of Sabbatai Zevi, another Jew, Polish Jewish, who was excommunicated and taught that purification came through transgression. Purification comes through sin. So we have the man of sin proclaiming he is God, sitting in the place of God, now sitting in the land of Canaan, Jerusalem. And so now the mystery of iniquity becomes no longer a mystery. But let's keep going here. It says, thirdly, the principal group of men who cranked up international banking were Satanists from the beginning. These Satanists now are the ones who run the Federal Reserve and are responsible for the creation of the U.S. Federal Reserve notes. Just having total control over the supply of U.S. paper money almost gives them leverage over the world's finances, without mentioning they control the World Bank. It is no accident, then, that they once established world financial control. They would do all in their power to divide and conquer and destroy both Christian and the Muslim faith in God. So when we come over here to Albert Pike's letter for the Third World War, he talks about them destroying Zionists, political Zionists. He talks about the destruction of the Muslim Arabic world, both mutually destroying each other, which we're seeing happening right now on the Gaza Strip with Israel and Palestine and all the Arab countries now coming in, the Muslim countries. And again, talks about the destruction of Christianity. Okay. So if they created these religions, it's nothing for them to destroy them. They gave you Christianity. They gave you Islam. They gave you Judaism. Okay, so all these religions are nothing but initiations. When you go to church, these churches, I'm not talking about churches that are teaching the word of God, I'm talking about these pagan churches. Okay, when you go into these Muslim temples, when you go into these synagogues, these are nothing but, you know, these are nothing but Masonic lodges and are initiating you into the pure doctrine of Lucifer. They're just grooming you and being groomed by these people, okay? Being groomed by these people here to serve their God. A little bit more here on the Rothschilds before we move on to the next name I want to talk about. It says when Germany failed, not only did Rothschild agents draft the treaty, prepare the idea of the League of Nations, but Max Rothschild was one of 11 men who took control over Bavaria. Max Rothschild was a Freemason in Lodge Number 11, Munich, Germany. So you have the Bavarian Illuminati in Germany eventually would be taken over by the Rothschilds, right? And it shows that they actually drew up the plans of the Illuminati to give to Adam Weishaupt. Connections to MI5, Rockefellers, J.P. Morgan, CFR. The Rothschilds have several agents which their money got started and who still serve them well. The Morgans and the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers were Murano Jews. So we're going to go into the Rockefellers next. Okay, so you can't talk about the Rockefellers without talking about the Rothschilds because the Rockefellers came from the Rothschilds. So they're actually a lesser family. Still very powerful, but I know a lot of people talk about the Rockefellers. But they are given their power and put in a position by the Rothschilds through family marriage. It says, but it was the Rothschild capital that made the Rockefellers so powerful. Power within Christendom. Right? Co-masters of the world. So here now, the Rothschilds' power on Christianity. The Rothschilds also wielded much influence and power, not only in secret societies, but also in Christendom's churches. The Salvation Army, under the suggestion of the Rothschilds, adopted the Red Shield. Roth equals red and Child equals shield for their logo. So you have the Salvation Army logo. Right, when you go to type in Salvation Army, what do you get? The Red Shield or the Rothschild, right? And, you know, you have people that are working on the low level, have no clue what's going on, right? So we're not talking about your everyday person, anybody who's worked for the Salvation Army, okay? We're just letting you know who's in control of the organization. Who's running things? You also have the Red Cross, which is also the Red Shield. So when you see these organizations pop up in disasters, right, know who's at work and who's looking to take full control of the scenario. Okay, just wanted to throw that in there real quick. Let's come back. All right, so here is your Red Shield. This is your Red Shield. One history of the Rothschilds remarks, the Rothschilds had rapidly propelled themselves into a position of immense financial power and political influence. They were an independent force in the life of Europe, accountable to no one, and to a large extent reliant on no one. Popular lampoons depicted them as the real rulers of Christendom. Say it again, popular lampoons depicted them as the real rulers of Christendom. Some of the Rothschilds have been involved in the campaign to loosen public morals. All right. So they've been put in place for all the immorality that you're seeing happening in our world right now, all the debauchery, to loosen the conservatism, the conservative morals, the conservative values, to loosen that and now switch over to the immoral society. And how will they do it? Through Christianity. You notice in your Christian churches, you can pretty much do whatever you want. The law is done away with. As long as you believe in Christ, live life however you want. And you got all kind of madness going on in these Christian churches. Well, now you understand that man of sin, it's his job to cause you to sin so he can rule and stay in power. It says here, each of the various tentacles that conspiracy theorists have put forth, the Jews, the Masons, the intelligence communities, the international bankers, the Prière de Sion, the Catholics, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, the New Age, the cults, each ties back to the Rothschilds' power. All right. And so, you know, we're going to keep going here, but it's becoming clear who is a major player with the control of this world and just happened to be a Jewish family. It says here the Rothschilds have been intimately involved in witchcraft and the Illuminati since its early known history. The Kaiser of Germany seems to refer to them when he said the magic powers of money as wielded by the Lord of Lucre are powers of black magic at its blackest. So the Bible tells us that the love of money is the root of all evil. So what would the Rothschilds do? They would use money magic. When you see the money and you see the banks, what do you typically see? What do you typically see? You see your bull. Right? You see your bull and your financial square is the bull. Who is your bull? Baal. So through this money, they have the purest form of black magic at their power to be able to use it against society, to control society. It says the Rothschilds, now it's talking about their allies, the Rothschilds and Rockefellers are only two of 13 controlling families of the Illuminati. And when you look at these 13 families, you know, you can pretty much say that they're all of Jewish descent. All 13, right? You may see on the Arab side, Arabs with this, you know, 13 families, but understanding Esau married Ishmael, married into Ishmael. And we're going to show that here more later. And so Esau has infiltrated all these particular races and taken control of them and sets himself as the people, even though he's not the people. But now being in there, he now has control over that race, over those people to make sure that they have total obedience to their agenda. It says here, two Jewish families that appear to be prominent are the Oppenheims and the Oppenheimers. What movie did we just see or that just came out? Oppenheimer, the Jew that created or has been said to be the father of the first atom bomb. Why have they been putting that out there so much lately? That story on World War II and the atom bomb being dropped on Japan. Jewish. A. Oppenheim was situated in Cologne. The Oppenheimers were early members of the Bavarian Illuminati. The Bund der Gerechten, League of the Just, was an Illuminati front run mainly by Jews who were Satanists. This Bund, financed in part by the Rothschilds, paid the Satanist and Mason Karl Marx to write the Communist Manifesto. The Jew Gunpel Oppenheimer was in the inner circle of the Bund. And so we see a consistent theme here. We talk about this interweaving, this interwoven of this web of power. We always see Jews, Jewish, always there and full control. Okay? It says here, the Jewish Encyclopedia, Volume 2, page 496, indicates other Jewish families adopted the Rothschild plan. These were the Lazards, Sterns, Speyers, and Seligmans, right? So here go some of the names, more of the names. So when we talk about the gatekeepers, I know Cat Williams came out, talked about these gatekeepers in the black community. Like, well, Cat Williams, and he dropped those names. Would Cat Williams ever drop these names? Would he ever name drop what we're reading here Because as long as you're talking about the gatekeepers, gatekeepers can be replaced. You just swap one out, swap one in. See, so we want to talk about the key masters. We want to talk about the names of the people that are in power that put the gatekeepers in place to gatekeep, that have given those gatekeepers the sin, the grooming, the initiation through the grooming, through the lodges, to then groom others that come under them and the black culture to be in sin, right? To be, have the culture that goes against our God, which causes us to stay on the bottom, right? And anytime you want to speak about it, you want to name drop these people, what do you get hit with? Anti-Semitism, blacklisting, right? But we're going to talk about it today. It says here, the Jewish families that established the Frankfurt Juden Lodge, this was the Masonic Lodge the Rothschilds belonged to in Frankfurt, included the Adlers, Speyers, Rices, Sichels, Ellisons, Hanaeus, Geisenheimers, and Goldsmiths. Isaac Hittelsheim, a Jew, who changed his name to Justus Hiller, see, that goes at crypto. If we're going to talk about crypto, let's not talk about cryptocurrency, let's talk about crypto Jews who are changing their names to hide. Okay, so you can't find them, so they stay hidden. But we're searching out the hidden things of Esau, right? So he changed his name to Justus Hiller, is credited as being the founder of this Frankfurt Lodge, right? So we're seeing all these lodges controlled, funded, created by who? Jews. Michael Hess, principal of the Reformed Jewish School Philanthropen, was an important figure in the lodge too, as was Dr. Ludwig Baruch. Looks like he changed his name later to Born, who joined in 1808. Most of these Frankfurt Jewish Freemasons engaged in commerce. Those Freemasons from 1817 to 1842 were the leaders of the Frankfurt Jewish community. A Gentile Mason in Frankfurt, Johann Christian Ehrman, began warning the German people that the Frankfurt Jewish Masons wanted a world republic based on humanism. What is humanism? A person may ask. They wanted a world based upon humanism. This is what DeMond Wilson spoke about. An outlook or system of thought attaching prime importance to human rather than divine or supernatural matters. So they would rather stress mankind or man and man's power over the supernatural or God's power, right? They would want your faith to be in man, not to be in God. Because if your faith is in man, now who's in control? Man. You're going to believe in man. You're going to follow man. So a Gentile Mason was warning the German people that this is what their plan was. In 1816, he came out with a warning pamphlet. Das Judentum in der Maali means the Jews in Masonry. A powerful ally of the world's Jewry can be seen beginning with men like Oliver Cromwell, who was considered a Mason. Since the core of the conspiracy of power is Jewish, the attitude of those allied with it hinges on their attitude toward the Jewish people. All right, let's keep going here. I think that was all I had highlighted for the Rothschild, because there's so much, there's so many pages here. But even when you keep reading, he even has a section titled The Five Wizards. Basically the five Rothschilds who are the most known Rothschilds. Okay. When Mayor Amschel Rothschild or Bauer died, he then, all his power then fell on those within the family, the brothers, five brothers who are deemed the five wizards. All right. And so before we now go over to the Rockefellers and what they have done within all this, given power by the Rothschilds, before we go into it here in this book, we're going to come over to the Synagogue of Satan. And let's come up here to the top. All right. So you have here where the Rockefeller really began to come into power in 1863. It says the Rothschilds used one of their own in America, John D. Rockefeller, to form an oil business called Standard Oil, which eventually takes over all of its competition. So this is another thing that you would notice with these Jews, right? They would move in and take full control of everything, and they would be the power. Okay, but understand who put them there, the Rothschilds. Here you have here, 1875, on January 1st, Jacob Schiff, now Solomon Loeb's son-in-law, after marrying his daughter Teresa, takes control of the banking house, Kun Loeb & Co. Schiff goes on to finance the Standard Oil Company of crypto Jew John D. Rockefeller. So I'm pointing out, you would see John D. Rockefeller and you would think, oh, he's just a regular white guy. No, these are Jews. These are crypto Jews hiding. Okay, it's all within the bloodline with the intermarrying of families. It says here, the Rothschilds claim that due to growing instability in the region and increasing competition from Rockefeller, the Rockefeller family are Rothschild descendants through a female bloodline. See that? So what is one of the qualifications to be a Jew? It's if your mother is a Jew, okay? So through the female bloodline, they are now considered family. They are now considered Jews. Going way, well back, however far they intermarried, to be married into the family now. So now, let's talk about these Rockefellers, the Rockefeller bloodline. It says one of the 13 satanic bloodlines that rule the world is the Rockefeller bloodline. Today, there are around 190 members of the family with the Rockefeller name and, of course, some others by other last names. This article is to explore further for those who investigate the Illuminati how the Rockefeller bloodline is involved in the promotion of the occult and Satanism and how they are involved in the control of the Christian denominations. So the Rockefellers are your main family who were put in place to control Christianity, right? Again, the Rothschilds are there doing their part, but the Rockefellers are the main players that are dealing with Christianity. It says this article keys in on just one family, the Rockefellers, to understand the full extent of the Illuminati's control of religion, including Christendom, would require perhaps several books. The Illuminati itself draws its lifeblood from around 500 very powerful families worldwide. The article will not attempt to explain their networks and the many organizations of the Illuminati. It will not even try to do this for the Rockefellers. In fact, no one knows how many trusts and foundations the Rockefellers have. They have hidden trusts within secret trusts within secret trust. It is estimated that they have between 200 and several thousand trusts and foundations. So again, Esau, hidden things, secret things, to draw the attribute comparison and parallel to who these people are. Okay. They have said in their encyclopedias there, Edom, the Bible has given the attributes of who Edom is, and then when you look today and see what they do and how they've gotten their power, how they're operating in secrecy. Any way that they can hide themselves, they're the masters at it. All right. And so they are, and this is what Damon Wilson was speaking about, the Rockefellers being over your educational system. They're the ones that our educational system and curriculum is what it is. Your drag queen story hour, right? Them looking to erase slavery out of the history books now to where, you know, it happened so long ago. Get over it. It shouldn't be discussed anymore. Forget about it. Looking to take history out of the slave book, out of the history books. All right. Magazines, your TV, and your religion. So we're going to talk about their power within Christianity. So what do they do within Christianity to maintain power? Right? They, number one, they provide a large share of the money that seminaries in the United States need to operate. So your seminary theologian school, they're the ones who give all the money there. So if they're giving all the money, who's in control of the school? Who's dictating what's being taught and told and what the curriculum is, what the qualifications are? You're being initiated. Okay, you're being initiated into a Babylonian priesthood. Number two, they provide a large share of the money that universities need to operate. Education influences the religious values of our people. All right, so they control your universities. Okay, all the money that's going into your universities, mainly by them. And if they control your universities, they control your religions, because you must come to the university to be put in a place to have any type of credential to be in and over a religion in any type of way. Right? So that's why you have, when you go to your universities, your fraternities, your sororities, this is a beginning initiation into these rites. So you have a lot of your Christian pastors, low-level Freemasons, and they have no idea of what's really going on because they're in their deceit being lied to, right? That's even in their own writings, that they lie to their members in Freemasonry. All right, only your higher-ups, right? As you go higher up, those that are more prominent, like your T.D. Jakes's and your Creflo Dollars, are your higher-up Freemasons, right? But again, if they must destroy Christianity, then your T.D. Jakes, who they created, must be destroyed. Your Creflo Dollar, who they created, must be destroyed. That's why you see what's happening right now with T.D. Jakes. These are signs that we're at the end. One by one, they're taking pieces off the chessboard. And think about it. When Albert Pike talks about being disillusioned, these Christians being disillusioned from Christianity, right, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal. When they do what they've done with T.D. Jakes and all those people from that church now are no longer going to T.D. Jakes' church, what do you think all those people are now? You think those people found a new church home? No. A lot of those people now become agnostic because their faith was in T.D. Jakes. A lot of those people now become atheists because they don't know, they don't believe in God no more. Well, guess what? Albert Pike said they're going to destroy Christianity and atheism at the same time. And you're still going to be brought into the pure doctrine of Lucifer. All right, so just understanding their playbook, if you understand their history and understand, you know, their plans, then now when we're looking at our reality, we can't be deceived by what's going on in the world because we know their playbook, right? We can't get caught up into the T.D. Jakes mess, whether you're a member of T.D. Jakes, right, or you see what's happening right now with T.D. Jakes. You can't get caught up in all the smoke, the emotion, the deception that comes from all that, okay, or whatever else they're bringing forth with the continued collapsing of Christendom, in the Christian church. I mean, they've already done a good enough job to where most people have left the Christian church a long time ago anyway. Right? But they're finishing the job. What they started, they're about to finish. You're going to have a society of total non-believers about to be brought into Lucifer's lap to bow to the beast. It says here, number three, they provide large grants to various religious organizations. Okay. So as you can see, through their black magic money power is a big part of their control. Right? They're able to control people through the money. Number four, their influence and control helps determine who will get publicity in the major news magazines. Number five, their influence has contributed to various anti-Christian organizations being set up. So all your New Age, your Church of Satan, okay, they've contributed to these anti-Christian organizations to help in the counterbalance and the destruction of Christianity. So they're funding all these New Age movements, New Age philosophies and ideals. What else do we have here? Number six, they directly help control certain religious groups such as Lucis Trust. We talked about this last broadcast. It says David Rockefeller is part of Lucis Trust Management. Lucis Trust puts out the book Externalization of the Hierarchy by Alice Bailey, which spells out the plan for the Satanists and New Agers on how the spiritual hierarchy, actually the demonic hierarchy, is to externalize their rule of the planet. The book gives quite a few of the details of the plan and is used as a textbook for New Agers at the arcane schools in New York, London, and Europe on how the New Age one world religion, one world government will be brought in. If anyone doubts the Rockefeller's commitment to Satan, read page 107 of Externalization of the Hierarchy. On page 107, Alice Bailey, president of the Theosophical Society and part of Lucis, formerly Lucifer Trust, tells us who will rule when the New Age, New World Order takes over. On the earthly level, humanity, so to speak, the ruler is given on page 107 as Lucifer. So before, you know, Albert Pike or outside of Albert Pike, okay, you see this being within their secret societies, the New Age movements, that this is the plan. And we don't have to go no further than to look in our reality right now and see who's ruling the day in this world right now. It's the god of this world, the devil. Okay? When you look at all the madness going on right now. It says, on the spiritual level, called Shambhala, the holy city, the coming ruler is given as the Lord of the world, which we Christians know as Satan. Lucis Trust knows it is Satan too, but for public consumption, they say that the ruler of the world is Sanat, a scrambling of Satan, Kumara. So they'll tell you that the coming ruler's name is Sanat, right, which they scramble as an anagram, Satan's name, or a title of Satan, the same way they give you Santa Claus, right, for Christmas when they tell you it's Christ's birthday, right? So I think that's all I wanted to get out of this book, volume two of The Bloodlines of the Illuminati by Fred Springmeier. If you don't have this book, it's a free PDF. You can get it. You know, again, it goes into all the bloodlines, not all of them, but a few of them. It's a three volume book set, which goes into the different names of these bloodlines. Okay. Real quick, just want to get in this volume one, Bloodlines of the Illuminati. Just one more name to see if we see any different characteristics so far, which we have read, comes to pretty much all things Jewish. Here we have chapter 1, the Astor family. It says the original founder of the Astor fortune was John Jacob Astor. For those, you know, who may be familiar, especially if you're on the East Coast of Waldorf Astoria. Waldorf Astoria is your Astors, 1763 to 1884. John Jacob Astor was born in Waldorf, Duchy or Baden, Duchy of Baden, Germany, from a Jewish bloodline. Surprise, surprise. The Jewish origins have been hidden, and quite a number of various ideas of the Astor's heritage have been put into circulation by the Astors. John Jacob Astor was a butcher in Waldorf in 1784. He came to America after a stopover in London, England. Although the story is that he came to America penniless, that may be true, he soon joined the Masonic Lodge and in 2 to 3 years had become the master of the Holland Lodge number 8 in New York City. So the story that they would want to give us, came over without a penny to his name to America, joined the Masonic Lodge, and within 2 to 3 years, he's the master of that lodge in New York City. That's the story they want us to believe. It says, this Holland Lodge is a prominent lodge in that many of its members have good connections to the Illuminati elite. An example of just one lodge, number 8 member, is Archibald Russell, 1811 to 1871, whose father was president of a real hotbed of Illuminati action for many years, the Royal Society of Edinburgh. By 1788, Astor was a master of Masonic Lodge number 8. This is rather interesting considering Astor could not speak English when he arrived in America and supposedly was very poor. So not only was he very poor, he couldn't even speak English. It says John Jacob Astor was always very famous for being cold-hearted, antisocial, a man who didn't have charm, wit, or grace. So he had no talent, couldn't speak English, no money, no charm, right? But somehow he rose to be master of the lodge within a few years. It says this quote comes even from a relative of the DuPont family who wrote a sympathetic biography entitled The Astor Family. This man lacked social graces and was so cold and was so poor during his first years in the U.S. Why did he rise to such prominence in Freemasonry? Certainly not because of his social graces, right? So understanding their playbook, you would understand what's going on here, all right? They would send in their family members into these places, right, to appear a certain type of way. Right on the bottom, poor. And then there's a success story. Look at his rise to prominence. And you too can climb the ladder the same way he climbed the ladder. When no, he didn't climb any ladder. He was placed there and was given the power, right, by those who had the power. And it was made to look a certain type of way. All right. So now it doesn't look, he doesn't look out of place. Right, he doesn't come in with all the money and all this, you know, good graces and just take over the power. And everybody's like, wait a minute, hold on here. What's going on? That's too obvious. Right. But when he comes in inconspicuous and takes power, nobody questions anything. It just looks like it looks like a success story. It says prior to 1817, John Jacob Astor entered into